Okay, welcome back to the show. Our guest in this segment is an old school medicine woman, Avi Essner, in jolly old England. Avi began learning to facilitate altered states of consciousness in 2010 with shamanic tantric practitioner training. And she followed that with birth into being facilitation in 2011. And then she ran transformative workshops using breath and movement to induce trance and trained other practitioners to do that as well until about 2017. She had used these healing skills and knowledge to help prepare women and their partners for childbirth, assisting as a doula for women in labor. And then interestingly, she began facilitating mushroom ceremonies in 2017 by request from a group who witnessed her powerful facilitation skills. This type of facilitation helped create a more of a calm, centered state, which is more of a natural childbirth space, a psychedelic sacred rite of passage. Since then, she's guided many journeys for people with or without substances, and she's researched chemistry and the biology of mechanisms behind the chemistry of mushrooms and searched out myths and stories about the old world and how this has been used through the ages and listening to the motifs of sacraments, including and especially of late, Amanita muscaria and its medicinal allies. She understands how to honor the ancients of the land who worked with these entheogens alongside the science and ethical practices. And she's integrating these into her therapeutic practice and looking at how individuals and groups can be supported by their relationship with the Amanita and nature as a whole. Welcome, Avi, to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Yeah. I might mention that we had a chance to meet you in person about 2 weeks ago when you were in Santa Cruz for a little bit. We knew Billy Sunshine quite well and had a chance to meet you thanks to a little dinner party at our beach house.
Oh, yeah. And Billy actually holds us responsible for that meeting with you because we happen to be the ones who introduced him to Clubhouse in the first place. And he's really turned that into a great place for meeting people.
Oh, wow. That's all very beautifully cyclic. I can't conjugate cycle right now.
Cyclic and synchronistic. Yeah.
There we go.
A little combination thereof. So you were here for what was called the Discovery Sessions. Could you tell our audience a little bit about what you were here to talk about?
Sure. I flew out to California from the UK to speak on a panel about Amanita muscaria. And really the intention behind that was to not only go into why it's a bit of both a stigma and an icon, but to really begin to make headway within the psychedelic community to take this mushroom seriously, because I find that often in conversation, the focus is on psilocybin and or LSD and or ketamine, etc. And that Amanita muscaria is actually sort of poo-pooed like as like a fad, which is very funny to me because it's actually an older mushroom and has been used in tandem and alongside psilocybin and many other entheogenic herbs and medicinal herbs as both a daily boost, especially in the northern climates where the sun does not come out so much for about 3-4 months out of the year, and there's a lot of hard work to do. It really helps to fortify those people. This mushroom has been used, and we've anthropologically been able to find evidence of its use 10,000 plus years
ago. Now, these are the mushrooms that are red with white spots on them.
I would say these are the cliche cartoon version of any psychedelic mushroom.
Very decorative mushroom.
Is the Amanita muscaria.
It's the icon. It's a little icon on our phones.
Yeah.
It's every Christmas you see them. It's the Mario mushroom.
Associated with Santa Claus.
Wonderland mushroom.
Yeah.
Like anytime there's this fantasy scene in any of our literature, it's the Amanita muscaria. And I think that if we were to look at all of our forgotten histories because of conquering, we will be able to see a continuity of that which remains important to us following along, even if we've forgotten the origin of why it's important. Mm.
Well, it seems to be present all over the world. It's not unique to just one ecosystem.
And it's not illegal either, right? That's an interesting one.
So it's Northern Hemisphere, although in recent decades it has been seen in the southern hemispheres because of the way that they take trees and move the trees like for ornaments in people's gardens. So it has begun appearing in the southern hemisphere, but it's predominantly a northern hemisphere mushroom, the whole of the northern hemisphere. And what was the second question?
The legality of it. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, the legality. Yes. Yeah. So it's legal most places, but not all places. So like, for example, Louisiana, it's illegal. Everywhere else, it's legal. The Netherlands has made it illegal. Australia has made it illegal. And I think Israel has just put muscimol onto its prohibited list, which would then include Amanita muscaria. But I'm telling you for nothing that the guards at customs, they don't know what they're looking at. And they're like, that's not, you know, it's just confusing to them. So they just let it pass.
Now, you use the word mucinol. Could you describe mucinol and
that's the active ingredient in the mushroom or the actual chemical?
Yeah, so the two main active alkaloids in Amanita muscaria are mucinol and ibotenic acid. And ibotenic acid decarboxylates through pH, through heat, or through acids into mucinol.
Uh-huh. And it has an effect on the GABA receptors, my understanding?
The GABA and the acetylcholine. Uh-huh. Yeah, so the muscarinic acetylcholine receptors, neurotransmitters, and the GABA receptors.
And that's significantly different than psilocybin.
Correct. So all tryptamines like psilocybin, LSD, they work on the 5-HT or the serotonin and dopamine receptors. And so that's a completely different neurotransmitter and protein pathway from GABA and acetylcholine.
Uh-huh. And this affects the central nervous system?
So it can affect the central nervous system, the parasympathetic. So GABA receptors affect things like sweat, salivating, temperature control kind of goes along with sweat.
Yeah.
It's actually also, when you look at your ACC, so that's the area that connects your limbic and your cortex.
Mm-hmm.
It's the area that controls your executive function, your balance. It's where the majority of the receptors that are affected by alcohol and barbiturates are located. There's a lot of crossover between legal substances and the effects of this mushroom. Although this mushroom, the way that it affects the neurotransmitters are not depressive, meaning when you take alcohol or barbiturate, you get a depressive effect on the system. Whereas Amanita muscaria can go either way because it's an agonist, which just means it activates the neurotransmitter instead of making it go one way or the other.
What I've seen online is that it mostly talks about having a calm effect on the nervous system. But you're saying,
I mean, only the muscimol part. So ibotenic acid has an excitatory effect. So there's a wonderful book written by Kevin Feeney called Fly Agaric, which is the common name for Amanita muscaria, a compendium of history, pharmacology, mythology, and exploration. And there's a wonderful paper in there written by Mark. I can't remember his last name. It's rubbish of me. But anyway, him and Carl go into the Amanita muscaria being one, if not the main ingredient in what the berserkers used for their incredible strength and ability to be such fierce and vicious warriors. Because ibotenic acid, when you're up on ibotenic acid, like you are up, you have the strength of 10 men, and you can walk 20 miles and you could still walk more. And there's like this, like, oh my God, everything's amazing. Let's do this. Yes, let's do that. I am a king. I am a god. And there's that kind of super up aspect of the ibotenic acid part.
So that would be more what the berserkers would be into.
So you could prepare a concoction in combination with other plants that grow indigenously across Europe that contain adrenaline spiking or
steroids, cortisol. It could be anything.
Yeah,
that...
well, no, not just cortisol, but the stimulants. So like for amphetamines, that was the word I was looking for. Thank you, Sonny.
When you were here at the Discovery Sessions, what would you consider some of your best takeaways from that session here in San Francisco?
So my favorite thing about that experience was actually the panel that I was a part of.
Uh-huh.
I very much inspired the panel and then felt like I was the glue. Like I really sort of rallied everyone and got them excited and inspired. And as we began to have conversations about what we wanted to present And what we found was that there was this very interesting cohesiveness. And that cohesiveness just grew and grew. And it was such a phenomenal experience of four individuals who are completely different and actually work with this mushroom in different ways, all being in agreement, all getting along, all yes-anding each other. And it felt like we were the embodiment of the variation and unified difference that this mushroom brings into harmony within the individual and within the collective.
And the panel, just to be clear, was focused exclusively on the Amanita muscaria, or was it more generalized subject?
So it was Amanita muscaria, destigmatizing. Well, that was actually the title, Destigmatizing Amanita Muscaria. And so we talked about, again, why we believe there's a stigma around it, why it's so iconic, health, like basic dosing parameters, what it can be used for. Because you have this up part, but then you also have this sleepy part. So when you decarboxylate it, or when you take it in the evening, when your biochemistry is ready to sleep and ready to convert serotonin into melatonin, then it can help with those systems. So you can take it in the morning and have your up, or you can take it in the evening and it will help you sleep within sort of 60 to 90 minutes beautifully. And it's the same preparation.
Do people use it for experiencing states of euphoria?
In thresholding amounts, and I would say low dose journeys, which we're talking sort of 8 grams and under, and that's like, that's a generous 8 grams. So, okay, there's there's a caveat with this mushroom, because it, a bit like the different strains of psilocybe. I can't say, oh yeah, big dose of psilocybe is 3 grams. That a big dose, or sort of normal journey dose, is 3 to 5 grams. Because if you were to have 3 to 5 grams of penis envy, that would be completely different from 3 to 5 grams of like golden teacher. So Amanita muscaria, even being the same mushroom, not different strains, but the same mushroom, has similar kinds of factors, like what time of year it was picked, what soil or forest it was growing in, how long it's been dried, has it been dried and kept in a sealed airproof container. So all of these things are different factors that
that affect its
strength. So, and when I speak about grams and dosing, I'm speaking about dried gram weight, which is very, 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 very different from fresh weight.
You know, I've noticed that there has been a number of online sites now that are offering for sale dried Amanita. There's also micro drops and such. For the uninitiated, what products are coming out around Amanita right now, and are any that you think are particularly good?
So you've been able to buy Amanita caps for as long as I've known about Amanita, which is about 7 years now. They've been around. They're just more, up until the past sort of year and a half, 2 years, it's been more localized. So you'd have to contact the foragers in Lithuania or Siberia or wherever for those kind of. So there's been an Amanita muscaria community for a long time.
So it's pretty apparent online then.
Yeah, there's been this boost. So with the whole decriminalization movement in the States and wanting to have legal mushrooms, and then people realizing that Amanita muscaria is considered an entheogen, even though it's a deliriant and a dissociative at different doses. It's legal. And so they've been using it and making all sorts of stupid, weird products from it. And some of them are rubbish, and some of them have stuff in there that's not even Amanita muscaria. And it's the wild west of silliness.
So how do you products. Sort through that then? What do you recommend to people who are curious or interested?
So what I would say is, one, look at the website. If it looks like it's one of those buy any drug websites, maybe pick a different website. I know Andrea over at Microdrops, and she's got some great products. She sells like a stock with it, which is quite nice. And when you're ordering caps, you can't go too far wrong with that, because you're ordering basically a raw material. And you're looking at things like how it was dried and all of these factors. But then if you just get the caps, it's like, how are you going to prepare it? And are you read up on those places to turn to know how to prepare it? And then there's a whole variety of answers. And what I say in my way, which suits me and the clients that I work with, mm-hmm. isn't the way that other people do it. And I can give like a really quick example of that.
Sure, yeah, let's hear it.
So I call my way the way of the nibble, because
the way of the nibble, okay.
Yeah, it's a book that I'm writing that goes more into the depth of practice and connection, and is about your personal relationship with this and other entheogens, as the premise in my mind is that these are very ancient spirits who really embody, that the flesh really embodies symbiotic relationship, because that's how they grow in the forest. They're ectomycorrhizal mushrooms, which means they only grow with trees, and they don't break the skin of the roots. They grow next to it and almost like hold hands with the roots, and then they give of their overflow, and the tree gives of its overflow of sugars, and there's this healthy union which is made, which makes the whole forest healthier. And that's how they work with us. And they're very ancient. They're older than psilocybin, according to the ethnobotanist researchers.
And they work and symbiosis. Symbiosis is
yes,
a relationship.
They are the flesh of symbiosis.
They teach us symbiosis in the process?
I do believe so. And so with such ancient ancestors who came before us, I feel like the first place of meeting is in your mouth. And to take a small amount, just a nibble, and to very slowly chew it and allow your saliva to mix with the flesh of this mushroom and really taste it and really feel what you feel. Feel how your body responds, feel what emotions come up and meet this. And multiple things are happening when you're doing this. One, there's this sort of psycho-spiritual thing that's happening. And physiologically, the mucosa lining of your mouth is beginning to absorb the alkaloids in that small amount of mushroom. And so you're literally aligning your biome to the biome of this mushroom. And then when you swallow, you're sending all of that information through your digestive system to your gut. And you're sort of taking your temperature of how you are in relationship to this mushroom.
Wow. Wow.
And of course, that method also follows suit with other mushrooms and plants. And the first sort of rule is, know what you're putting in your mouth. If you're not sure, don't put it in your mouth.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. And then from there, and from that initial meeting, and a lot of people who work with me will really, actually, it feels really good. And so they follow the way of the nibble up to certain doses. And they know what are safe doses to physically eat and what could actually cause some stomach upset.
Well, just to point out how different this is than what I understand of most people is that they very much try to mask the flavor of the mushroom through some kind of accompaniment, either sweet or savory or something like that, and treat it more like it's a ingredient in a larger recipe rather than just the mushroom itself.
Well, I agree with you, and I love recipes, and I love working with this mushroom in lots of different recipes. And there's so many preparations of not just this mushroom, but like there's so many recipes. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you mentioned MicroCalm, micro drops, M-Y-C-R-O, as one.
Micro drops.
Yeah, Andrea's
M-Y-C-R-O,
company.
Yeah. And they're pretty legit as far as you're concerned.
Yeah, she's a beautiful friend. We get along very well. We actually created an Amanita's professional group on Signal for other professionals working with Amanita muscaria specifically, or other Amanita muscaria professionals.
Yeah, I see. She has focused, grounded, and motivated. It says three different elixirs.
Yeah, well, she's got a number of elixirs that don't have their Ayurvedic combinations that then can be mixed with psilocybin or Amanita muscaria or LSD or whatever the individual wants to mix it with. And so this gets into like admixtures and what complements these different things. But where were we speaking into was the initial meeting in entheogenic plant medicine or mushroom.
Yeah.
And the difference between just meeting that mushroom for the first time before you get into all the fun recipes.
Yeah.
And then you know your baseline of who you are in meeting and being in relationship with this one spirit.
And how do your customers feel about this advice? Do you run into people who are pretty comfortable and used to the idea of relating to the personality and the spirit of what they're ingesting, or is this kind of new territory for them?
I have a mixed collective of people. So anyone who's more interested in the magical performance enhancing, magic enhancing elements of it are happy to follow the way of the nibble. But I have a lot of clients who are using it for medicinal, nervous system ease, healing, fibromyalgia, multiple sclerosis, depression, ADHD, like the list of things that it can help to ease the symptoms of is actually quite extraordinarily long. But just to kind of say that there are other people who have those conditions who use Amanita muscaria medicinally, we just take the crushed mushroom, put them in capsules, and they just take the capsules. Mm-hmm. And I say something slightly rude along the lines of, to me, putting the mushroom in a capsule is like wearing a condom during sex, and why are you having sex with somebody you need to wear a condom with?
can it be used for enhancing sexual pleasure?
Oh, apparently not in a capsule.
Like, I'm blushing. You can't even see it, but you can hear it in my voice.
Well, okay. How about therapy sessions? Can Amanita be used in a therapy session?
So there's different dose levels. I mean, just like every other thing, right? So there's different dose levels and different experiences of those dose levels. So in low dose levels, which is, like I said, kind of up to 8 grams roughly.
Yeah.
You're looking at a light euphoria. It's very social. It's a little bit like being drunk, that kind of like joyful, friendly, social feeling.
Wow. And slightly less inhibited than your normal self.
Like MDMA?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so what I say, if you that's where you want to stay, you have to watch out for the mormors.
Yeah.
Because it feels so good, you're like, ooh, more, ooh, more, ooh, more. But if you follow that more thing, you're going to slide into a medium dose, and that's definitely a very different experience.
Well, what do you get? What happens there?
At a medium dose, you start to get, again, like you're drunk, you get a bit more wobbly, and that can, as your body is decarboxylating the ambotenic acid, that can get on a slippery slope really quick, where you're discombobulated, uncoordinated. The mind is sharp, and there's no visual distortion, but there's physical distortion, and sometimes things that are quite small or very big. Sometimes things that are like a doorway, like a big doorway. It's like, oh, I don't know if I can get through that. And then you're like bouncing off the doorposts.
Sounds kind of like Alice in Wonderland.
It's very much like that. And then just like with Alice in Wonderland, very Mad Hatter, emotions can come up like the rabbit where suddenly he's sobbing at a poem or laughing hysterically. So the emotions want to come up.
Oh.
And if one resists the emotions that want to come up, that's where waves of nausea or physical discomfort start really coming in quite strong, which increases the uncomfortable sensations of the size and the big, the small, the time loops. Oh, the time loops.
Yeah, this, what are the time loops? Tell me about the time loops.
So, like, it's literally, like, you'll just be in a loop. Like, you'll say the same thing over and over, but, like, there'll be pauses in between, or you'll, like, do the same action over and over, and you won't necessarily remember that you've done it until suddenly you're like, haven't I already, like, and then you sort of realize that you've been in this time loop, and
this is fascinating.
Well, that's certainly, because that can be positive or negative. I know in post-traumatic stress syndrome, that kind of repetition of the trauma keeps happening sometimes, and that you, as a therapist, you're trying to stop that from reinforcing the negativity.
So the way that I see it is that the time loops teach you to catch those repeating patterns that everybody has. And so you get to practice, oh, I got it. And then you can forget again. And you're like, oh, I got it. And what I find for myself and for the clients I've been working with for a few years now, the ability to catch those looping patterns, even when there's no Amanita muscaria around, gets easier with the use of Amanita, especially when this sort of time loop training happens. There was moments where I was with Carla, who is one of the panelists for the discovery sessions, and we were driving back from the conference, And we went around the same weird interstate loop like three times. And on the third one, we both look at each other. We're like, we're looping. It's Amanita. And we just turned around and we're like, done. Got it. Message received. And then we just came out of the loop. And it's literally about training those parts of ourselves that can hold, catch, guide, and facilitate greater inner harmony with all of our other parts.
That is really amazing. And what I find also really amazing is you expressing that that phenomenon comes up along with resistance to your emotions.
Well, so the phenomenon comes up when the mushrooms decide the phenomenon wants to come up. The physical discomfort, so like waves of nausea or actual vomiting, tummy grumblings, headaches, any of these kinds of what I would call home physical holding patterns. So people who tend to get headaches, that's the physical pattern that will come up when they're resisting the emotions that the mushroom is wanting to come up. And the thing is with this mushroom, which I say probably as much as I talk about the mormors, is that the mushroom rewards bravery. So if you resist it, the mushroom will put that pressure on you and you will have physical discomfort.
So the symbiosis process is really surrendering, or it's sort of relaxing, going with what wants to come up.
Yes. And if you do that and you're able, and you feel supported in facing whatever trauma or emotion or grief wants to come up. And if you are able to step forward and face it and feel it and feel the support of the mushroom with you, then as you move through it, knowing that you will come out the other side, it rewards you in the most amazing ways. And everybody has these incredible stories of how there's this extra reward that happens when they take these courageous actions to really face what's coming up.
Well, as a therapist, do you sit with the patient for the full duration of the trip?
Yes.
You charge by the hour?
No, that would be ridiculous because so it depends on purpose, right? So it's like if somebody's coming to me because what they're wanting is to look at trauma patterns that are running and they're ready to actually rewire them, which requires facing them, feeling them, and then being able and ready to receive the experience that they needed to happen but did not experience.
So you can be in a receptive state with a therapist when you're on Amanita and take feedback.
Like I said, there's different kinds of journeys with Amanita, and it depends on your biochemistry and it depends on your dose and all of these different factors. So I know how to make the preparations for the journeys that the individuals want to take.
Gotcha.
So like really low to medium doses, oftentimes they're quite short because people, like the deeply intoxicating parts are done. And then like within sort of 3-4 hours, and then even though the mushroom is still active in the person, it doesn't inhibit your ability to see. It doesn't inhibit your cognitive function. As long as you're safe and you feel supported, you're free to go.
Do you ever experience any superpowers or new human awarenesses like telepathy or psychic connectivity?
Me personally like other people?
I guess, for you personally, I would then say it was probably true for other people too. But yeah, I'm just wondering
I've always had abilities, and what Amanita muscaria has done for me is help me not be afraid of my own power, not be afraid to just name what I see, and to be able to know when it's appropriate to speak and when it's not appropriate to speak. Just because I see it doesn't mean I need to talk to it or into it or share what I'm seeing. So when I'm like running a class, for example, like I run these full moon self-love classes, and during those, people in that field of energy begin to pop, their trauma just begins to release. And so I know, and I can see, and I facilitate that. Total strangers, and they're like, how do you know? It's like, I see you. How do you know? I see you. Like, how did you know that they did that to me? I was like, I see you. It's okay. I've got you. And I just have those abilities. But since working with Amanita muscaria, I feel so comfortable in my own skin. And so for anybody else who has these kinds of natural abilities, but fear or conditioning or shame, for example, shut them down when they were young or whenever, it really helps to face those blocks within self and allow out your natural evolutionary abilities.
Now, can that include creativity? Can you write on it? Or?
Definitely. You can write, you can draw, you can dance, you can sing. Oh my gosh, singing and movement, especially on low and low medium doses, it's as good as MDMA in my mind.
Wow.
Yeah.
What do you see the future would look like with Amanita? How would you have envisioned it unfolding? What would you like to see?
Gosh. Well, I have quite a strong opinion about the whole of the entheogenic movement in that I feel it's a crime against our birthright as human beings being born on a planet to make something that grows illegal. And I think that there's something very interesting that Amanita muscaria has not been legal in the majority of places. And while we children sort out our silliness,
yeah,
I feel like there is a balance coming in where there's a calling forth of real elders. And I don't mean old people. That's not what I mean when I say elders. I mean people who have a spiritual maturation and are able to hold that energy of elder, of wise woman, of wise man, of listening, of laughing at the small stuff, of holding the grief and really bringing people back into the center of community. And I mean that in the most natural term as opposed to any kind of philosophical concept.
Bring out the wise elder in all of us, ultimately.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think that I would like to see this continued movement forward in symbiotic relationship in all the pillars of our society. And I think that within the psychedelic community and within the healing communities, that this other mushrooms and herbs are really beginning to create an environment that invites people into more respect of themselves and others and more balance. And I think Amanita muscaria more so than psilocybin, because you can eat as much psilocybin as you want and you might have a really intense psychological experience, but it's not going to kill you. Whereas if you disrespect Amanita muscaria too much or you go too wonky with it, it can kill you.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting point, because that also has been why it isn't illegal, because it was considered a poison by some.
Yeah, but the doses are pretty.
Right.
Alcohol kills more people than Amanita, I promise.
Yeah. Fly agaric. Now, that name came from thinking of it as a poison, right?
Yeah, so the fly agaric is just the colloquial name for the Amanita muscaria.
Right.
You know, but you have a whole list of indigenous names, and in Germany they call it the lucky mushroom.
Shamanic uses in Russia, I think Siberian shamans, I think you're using it as well.
Yeah, they're still using it, but not just even like it's a mixture. It's not just the shamans who use it. So indigenous people of Siberia during the winter months, they just chew on it, like stick it in their mouth, and then they get on with their, you know, walking the mile to get the water or carrying like all these logs on their head and like really physically hard labor. And it's cold and there's not a lot of sunlight. And they use it to fortify them, to give them the strength that they need to carry out the tasks that they have to do. And then you have these wonderful folk medicine women predominantly throughout Eastern Europe, in the Slavic countries, who work with this mushroom and many other traditional old school medicine women. They don't know English. I don't even think they care.
How do you think it would change geopolitics if our statesmen and politicians were aware of these experiences?
Do you think that they're not aware of these experiences?
Well, I think if you start seeing how everything is symbiotic and connected to itself, and that we are one, in a sense, with the intelligence of the planet, then we're less likely to be lost in nationalistic ideas. And one country fighting another, because the whole idea will become more aware that we just made all that stuff up. Those boundaries aren't really who we are. I'm thinking that some of that, how we're interconnected, can only help our politicians understand how to create a win-win.
Well, I like your question, Zeva. Do you really think that they don't already take that into consideration? Isn't that...
Do they?
My understanding in terms of the cultural phenomenon of why drugs were scheduled under Nixon, who started the war on drugs, and why it's so important to make laws regarding their use, is literally a form of racism, and to associate different uses of mind-altering substances with different groups and creating laws that disenfranchise those groups.
I would agree with that. I'd also... If you have too many of your populace who don't want to fight in your wars and don't want to consume your pharmaceuticals, then your national security and your national budget is threatened.
Especially if you are a military wealth machine and you base your entire model on collecting money around wasting resources in wars.
Yes. And this is not a new phenomenon. This has been going on for longer than we'd like. And I think that when we start having leadership that cares more about people than resources, then I think that we'll start seeing different legislation and different types of national communities coming together. But as long as the priority is on the bottom line, what kind of good we can do or they can do that doesn't affect their income too much. And I understand the arguments on both sides, because there's like this, well, if we didn't have money, how would we fix the roads and the schools and all these kinds of things? But there's more creative solutions when the larger corporations that are really contributing to and pulling the strings of the politicians have those vested interests.
Well, in this arena,
at the heart.
Yeah, the heart is very important, but to bring that into Washington would be interesting. I guess in this arena, we were talking about Big Pharma has big influence on Washington. They have all kinds of special interest groups there, and that's how the legislation gets through their influences. What is the relationship of Big Pharma potentially with these kinds of substances?
Natural substances.
Yeah. Is there a chance that Big Pharma might embrace this at some point?
Here's some fun facts of history.
Yeah.
So the reason why the muscarinic acetylcholine receptors are called that is because one of the very first compounds or substances that they were trying to synthesize was thin Amanita muscaria. And they realized that muscimol affects the muscarinic acetylcholine receptors. And so actually it got named in our body after this mushroom and the muscarin within it.
And what do those receptors control in our body?
Everything.
Is it pain receptors?
Is it
sleep?
Everything. So your muscarin, so you have two main neuroreceptors that run through your whole body, your muscles, your skin, your organs, your sperm, your ovum. I could keep going, but I think we get the point. And that's your nicotinic acetylcholine receptors, which turn on, like say, go, be active. And your muscarinic acetylcholine receptors, which say, stop, rest, digest, relax. Or like unflex, depending on what system we're affecting. So when the nicotinic, and yes, that's from nicotine, nicotinic acetylcholine receptor is activated and turned on, it says go, and you get spontaneous motility or activity of whatever that turned on thing is. And then the reverse, when the muscarinic is turned on, the opposite happens. Now, when we have things that get stuck in either of those receptors, then we have a dysfunction in our regulation, whether that's in our muscles or skin. We're looking at things like epilepsy. We're looking at things like painful contractions, Parkinson's, oversweating, undersweating, overactive bladder, underactive bladder. All of these things are controlled by your acetylcholine receptors, your entire autonomic nervous system, and like a whole lot in your brain as well. So it's a really important neuroreceptor for all of your functionings, which is why it's such a medicinal and varied mushroom, especially when you're looking at the microdosing to thresholding levels. And just to sort of throw in there that if you are using it for pain management, what would be a threshold dose for somebody who's not in any pain would be experienced as a microdose, because there's so much pain that you just get the relief of the pain and you don't get the overt threshold normal experiences, but you just kind of feel eased and you have the, like a light sense of euphoria with the easing of the pain.
Well, that's very interesting, because I was going to ask you about microdosing Amanita, and it sounds like it definitely has its effect on dealing with pain, especially. Anything else on microdosing that you would benefit from?
Oh gosh, mood, focus. But I say focus, but like sometimes it's like, if we look at our bodies, not ruled by our minds, but as a foundation of community, your body has its own agenda, your emotions have their own agenda, your mind has its own agenda. And either those three things as your foundation of self are getting along and communicating well, or they're not. So when you take Amanita muscaria, it's not going to say, oh, well, just because you think the mind's in control means that I'm only going to listen to the mind. No. So it's going to be what you need. So your biochemistry and mixing with the mushroom, taking it as a microdose, is going to bring up what you most need. And if that's energy, great. If you're not sleeping well and what you need is just deep sleep, then that's what it's going to do. If what you need is to release that emotion that you've been holding on to for X amount of time, then that's what's going to happen. And there's no way to cognitize or know what that effect is going to be unless you have a very clear and communicative relationship between your mind, your emotions, and your body. And then the mushroom will still surprise you, because they love surprising.
Yeah. So it's really all about the communication with the Amanita.
Oh, golly, yeah.
Yeah. Now, that brings up another thing, because, you know, a lot of psychedelics like LSD is synthetic. It doesn't really have a spirit per se behind it, or at least most people don't think so. But in this case,
I get into conversations about that. There's a debate. The jury's still out.
Yeah, right. It might
and
be.
And nobody's
new...
giving the spirits a vote.
Yeah, but the Amanita definitely has a spirit. It's been around a long time. And you would say it's a good idea to cultivate a relationship with it for the best effects. And how do
I feel like something that's that old and which is sort of looking at it affecting a foundational neurotransmitter in our physical bodies and it being able to control time space means that it knows a lot more about me than I know about me in terms of what I am.
That's the parent, you're the child.
And you trust its and you trust its intentions towards you.
I've been working with this mushroom for 7 years, and when I found it because a yew tree told me to find my mushroom teacher. And as I was going to pick my kids up from school, I heard my name and I turned around. There was nobody there but just this mushroom. And it was just such a strange way to come into relationship with this mushroom that I just kind of was like, okay, I've been asking for a teacher. I was hoping it would be a person, but this is what's shown up. And then over the course of about 18 months or so, I learned to trust, and we worked really slowly and carefully together to build that trust. And then in year two, that trust grew. And over the years, the mushroom always sort of pushes me into those areas where I'm a little bit afraid, or more than a little bit afraid. And always there's this hands on my back that are like, we got you. Do you trust us? And it's like, okay, yeah, I feel you and I trust you, because so far you've been consistent and you haven't let me down. And only when I've dishonored you have I been slapped. And I accept that as the learning that it needed to be. I corrected my behavior and we moved back into right relationship. Mm. So I do trust this mushroom. And even when I'm a little bit nervous, I still lean into that space where, as long as I continue to honor and respect myself and the mushroom, I know that I'm okay, and that what I'm being asked to do, whether that's in a journey or whether that's in my life, is leading me toward the direction that I want to grow in.
Mm. Beautiful. Just wonderful to hear your stories of relationship.
How does this relationship allow you to have relationships with other mushrooms like psilocybin?
Well, actually, that's a great question for me, because honestly, I've been playing and working with psilocybin since I was a teenager, mm-hmm. an older teenager.
So even earlier.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was like, hey, let's get together and do LSD. Okay. Let's get together and do psilocybin. All right. We're like 17-year-olds and we're like, you know, what do you want to do for your birthday? Let's do this.
And you're in your 40s now, right?
Yeah. Yes. I'm in my 40s now. Okay. I'm a fan of LSD. I really enjoy that relationship with that molecule. Uh-huh. But with psilocybin, I was kind of felt like it didn't matter how much I would take. I never really got any visuals. I always just kind of felt weird. And like, I had like sticky webs on my hands, and I just kept my experience on psilocybin up until about 2015, which it was like, why do people do this? It's just weird. What is this thing? What is this body thing? Why are we human? This is just weird. And like, that was my experience on psilocybin.
That's really funny. I have another friend
not
who,
really your ally.
let me just say, is more of an ally with San Pedro cactus. And when he has an experience with San Pedro cactus after, say, recently ingesting psilocybin, the cactus said to him, I can't believe you're hanging out with that fungus.
But he's such a fun guy.
Yeah. Well, and then you have people like Lorenzo Haggerty, who really claims that he strongly experienced that ayahuasca is very disdainful towards marijuana. And, you know, like these allies, like they all have their own attitudes about each other.
Yeah, except for Amanita muscaria. And so this is where I'm driving this. So since working with Amanita muscaria, I've made friends with psilocybin. Like, I get it. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're amazing. I get you now.
Oh,
and
yeah?
Like all of the weird stuff that didn't quite like, Amanita's like, no, come on. And holds my hand. And it's like, let's go meet psilocybin and we can show you like what's going on. And all those things that were in dis-ease are now eased. And I'm like, oh, well, I kind of get it now. Yay. And then it partners beautifully with cannabis. They're super friends. Yeah. And like, if I'm honest with you, because I have a small contingency of psychonauts who are happy to explore, and I've convinced them all to stack Amanita muscaria with their normal things.
Yeah.
And then report back their findings.
Sure. Yeah.
So far, whether it's synthetic or organic, Amanita muscaria seems to get along with everything and everyone.
Wow. It's like having O negative blood.
Maybe it's a grandma among the allies, you know, something like that.
Well, I call them grandparents because I, both in the folklores and the mythologies, you get both female and male spirits that are traditionally affiliated with this mushroom. But then I also personally in different journeys have experienced both male and female energies, and more female, but in my first journey and then in two other journeys, the sort of the father grandfather energy came forward in incredible ways that I didn't even know I needed or knew how to ask for. So it's a both spirit. It's the unification of masculine and feminine. It is the beginning and the end of all things. It is dichotomy in the flesh of a mushroom.
Wow.
But like a dichotomy that is one thing. It's kind of tricky to, it's very Alice in Wonderland. It's big and it's small, and that's one thing.
Paradox. The paradox.
Yes. Maybe paradoxical, but it makes sense mm-hmm. in the moment before it's kind of like, whoa, okay.
Yeah.
Do you ever get downloads from the mushroom? Like a lot of information, and that plays out over time?
Like a preview?
Like some states of consciousness where you'll get a major hit of information, but it's almost unconscious. And then once it's in your system, it takes a while to spool out, if you will, or to play out as an experience.
Well, again, I've always had abilities. Uh-huh. So I've had precognitive dreams and flashes of quote-unquote deja vu uh-huh. or insight into people and their pathways way before psychedelics.
Just naturally for your own endogenous self.
Yeah. So I naturally have always had hallucinatory experiences. I wish there was a better word for it, because so far the majority of them have proved true as opposed to just seeing something that may or may not be there.
Well, clairvoyance, clairaudience, I guess would be terms for that.
Yeah, you know, like there's precognition, there's clairvoyance, there's clairaudience. It's however I'm being communicated to and then how I interpret it. My strongest ability is through my feeling body, which is like empathy, but it's like amplified empathy. So it's almost, I call it like being a whale, where it's almost like I receive the ripples of information and then I'm able to translate them into words or into a message or whatever it is, like how bats or whales or swallows use that kind of sonar, if that makes sense.
Hmm. Great. It's sort of a capacitor for psychic vibrations into new medium.
Yes, that's a great way to say it. Thank you.
Often analogies are helpful in understanding these things. Like, is there, for example, a cosmic search engine that you're becoming aware of, tuning into, that gives you information from the plant world or from the fungus universe to us mammals? I wonder if biology itself has its own internet, if you will, that connects itself and has a knowledge web that involves all of us, all the species.
I think so. It's sort of like I was talking about the webs and I was like, what are these webs? Like, why is it sticky? But like those webs, it's like those webs are connected to all things everywhere at all time. Yeah. And that's an impossible thing for my cognition, my mind to digest.
Like, infinity is hard to digest. Yes.
Oh my God. It's really intense. It's easier to sort of self-regulate and then like relax, surrender, and feel, and then just allow the information that's important for this personality to receive.
Yeah.
But for me, it is like those webs or threads that connect all life. And I feel very akin to the mythologies with the Fates or the Sisters of Weird or the Norns. It's all the same name for these characters who live in the roots of the world tree or the tree of life. So that's the sort of, I guess, metaphor or mythology that I most connect to with the abilities that I have and how I receive information, because it feels like it comes on these energetic waves that are connected to these threads that are woven through all time space.
Mm. Do you find that you're connecting more and more with like-minded people, the higher bandwidth connectivity, shall we say, these days?
I find that I just connect really well with people. And it doesn't matter whether they're salt of the earth and like their instant coffee in McDonald's or they're super.
Yeah, I can see that. That's a great ability. But what about people who are really in alignment with you, that have a multidimensional connection with you?
I connect very well with those, like the whole spectrum of people. I just connect very well with. Where the clashes happen is sometimes in relationship. The thing that wants to come up, so like a jealousy or something that doesn't feel good that wants to be let go of, it'll rumble up and feel challenged. Not because of something I've necessarily said or done, unless I am being cheeky, and I do have my cheeky parts. You know, there's definitely a mischievous fairy part or two in here, but most of the time I'm just curious and open and happy to connect. And unless it's not nice, and then I'm like, okay, yep, we tried that. No, thank you. Bye-bye. And so there's a wonderful mix. And I actually appreciate the variation of people I'm in connection with who can really meet me at those deeply spiritual and interconnected ways that I love to be in, as well as people who, like I said, are very salt of the earth. And actually, I really like all of the insights and the genius that comes from all of these different people, because everybody has their genius, whether they're aware of it or not.
Yeah. Yeah. So true. When you connect with someone and see that in them, it helps them see it in themselves and awakens the grid a little bit more of human awareness. Yeah. Beautiful. Well, good. Such a joy talking to you. What is next for you? What are you planning? What, you got a book coming out or a movie or what?
You have a calendar people can consult they know what you're up to?
Yeah. How do we reach you?
Well, so I have a website. I'm very consistent both in my social media and my website. Everything is aviester.com or aviester on Instagram or aviester on Facebook. I'm Avi Ester everywhere because I'm Avi Ester everywhere.
You are Avi Ester.
I am Avi Ester. I am writing The Way of the Nibble. I'm also writing a book of love letters. They're hypnotic, erotic love letters, mainly because I just really like writing it. And I have a lot of that already written. And it's fun to compile and to create these kinds of journeys that have these beautiful emotional, like somatic overtones and undertones. They're nice journeys. And the writing the two books in tandem help each other.
Beautiful. You know? Yeah.
And then there's a number of retreats coming up from October, although I might also, because there's a festival here in the UK called All Things Fungi that I'll be at in September. So the sort of journeys and retreats and foraging workshops will start sort of end of September-ish and carry on through the beginning of the winter months. I will be flying out to Vancouver to run things there. And then there's some people who are exploring having me come down to Mexico. And so there's a lot of interest, and we're looking at how we can meet all the different requests without exhausting me.
And online stuff too, no doubt, for connecting.
Yeah, so there's often different things. At the moment, I've really been enjoying all the in-person stuff. So locally in the UK, I run a monthly class that's just really magical. I'm even in awe of coming together and the way that I'm facilitating. It's just, it's really beautiful. And then there's the local retreats. And of course, I have my beautiful clients who come and find what they're looking for and then, you know, fly and go and roam. And I love that. Yeah. So there's always this interesting mix of these inspired offerings that range from free on social media to paid, whether that's one-to-one or in group settings.
Yeah.
Both here in the UK, and then I'll be coming out to the West Coast at the end of the year.
On the planet. Now, I got to ask you, you're officially a British national, but you have mostly an American accent.
Yes. Well, so I grew up in Virginia. Between the metropolitan area of Washington, D.C. and Richmond, Virginia. And then I've lived in the United Kingdom for about 20 years. So I have like a weird American English, like an anglicized American accent, but I actually really enjoy it. It suits me, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure you could probably put on a good British accent if you want to.
It's not too bad. It's not too bad.
That's very good. So, by the way, I like your description on your Facebook page, your bio: fairy queen, evolutionary catalyst, tantric rebirthing facilitator, medicine woman, and grounded dreamer.
Yeah, that's me.
Great. Well, from that vantage, Avi Ester, could you maybe leave us with a little dream, earthbound, earth grounded wisdom for people to reflect on as they seek their next magical purpose
after
in
hearing
life?
After hearing you here.
Well, I think the best bit of grounding wisdom, especially during spiritual emergency or psychosis, however you want to view that, is when you feel that confusion, turn toward nature, the grass, the trees, the sky, the water, whatever nature is around you, turn toward it and just listen. Listen with your ears, listen with your eyes, listen with your body. Just notice what you're hearing, seeing, feeling. Listen with your whole self. And then something will become clearer, because in nature, truth lives.
Thank you so much, Avi.
Beautiful.
Beautiful talk.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Yeah, thanks. Well, we'll look forward to seeing you again in the unfolding future.
Yes.
Oh, I love it. I very much look forward to it.
Thank you, Avi. Avi Ester, E-S-T-H-E-R. All right. Bye-bye.
It's good for now.
All right. There we go.
Yeah.